Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to a Holden Forum. The topic tonight is nuclear power, nuclear weapons, points of view. And as the participants who will make the opening statements and I have just been visiting up here, we would like to stress that the commonality here is in the adjective nuclear and not in the noun, weapons or power. That there are a lot of issues related to nuclear, and we have some people who can share specific things from their own points of view, but we're not necessarily talking about the same subject. What we would like to do is to explore people's points of view, not only the three people who are up here, but also all of yours, because we really do feel that at Holden, one measure of the special lay reflection that is Holden is participation in these kinds of events and discussions. We are asking each of the gentlemen up here to make a statement for about 5 minutes. They are not intended to be face or answer statements to each other. They are independent statements from the person's own point of view and own experience of a particular topic. And we will ask them to introduce themselves and their connection to the issue, whether that issue is nuclear weapons or nuclear power. Then we would like to open it after this 5 minutes for your questions and for your responses. I would ask that you keep your questions short, and we'll try to keep the answer short up here so that as many people as possible can participate in our discussion. Okay, to begin, the first person who will speak is Bill Matheson.
Right.
Is that right? Who is a member of the Holden Science and Technology Committee, right? Which will be beginning meeting later this week.
Just started today.
Started today. Okay, very good. Bill?
Well, first let me say that when Larry invited me to make a few remarks, I have no idea what the other's going to say, and I'm sure that we have different backgrounds, so we're hopefully going to try to contribute some thoughts to stimulate you in what is usually quite a controversial and emotional subject. I, for one, don't expect that any of those people here who have strong feelings about nuclear power are going to be convinced otherwise, or nuclear weaponry, perhaps by anything we say, but hopefully we can bring a few facts and maybe different viewpoints to you. Now, as you may perceive, my bent very quickly, my background is in liberal arts and engineering and physics, and my professional experience is again in the applied sciences and research and project management and so on. A good deal of this has been associated for a number of years in the nuclear field, both in nuclear, not in weaponry, but that side of it has been in peaceful uses of nuclear power, nuclear energy, and particularly for about 15 years in associated with uses of nuclear radiation, what I would call beneficial uses of nuclear energy in or radiation in general, some energy, in medicine and biomedical engineering. Now we're asked to deal tonight with two aspects of the atomic process which are very different, weaponry application and peaceful uses. Now I would dare say that many people who are against or afraid of nuclear energy in the form of central station power generation, that is reactors, are probably against it or fearful of it because of the radiation aspect. And it's the radiation they fear. But I would advance the old cliche that you've all heard and plead that one doesn't consider throwing out the baby with the bathwater. For those who haven't looked into the field, the benefits of radiation, control radiation, have been very great. And to know these is to be struck with the tremendous boon this has been. I'll say just two or three of them. nuclear medicine, both diagnostic and therapeutic. The number of lives that have been lost in nuclear power generation are extremely small. The number of lives that have been saved and are being saved by proper use of this radiation, which includes reactors, radioisotopes, nuclear accelerators, and so on, are quite large, and we're learning all the time. Of course, it's a quite extensive use in industry also, both in process control, quality control, production, and many other forms of industrial applications that increase productivity and contribute to the economic benefit. I would caution some people with whom I argue about this to be a little beware of extreme positions. It's certainly, it seems to me, very reasonable to be against nuclear weaponry and also simultaneously for those aspects of peaceful uses of nuclear energy. That seems to me quite reasonable, but I would say it's questionable reason to be for the one or to be against the one because of the other. I think about that either way. In my own judgment, my own experience, nuclear power is the most economical method we have for generating large central station electrical power, with the exception, of course, of hydro, but we are fast running out of that. And certainly, at least by the record, it has very definitely been the safest. So it has some arguments for it. Making a couple of analogies here, we should no more cast out the beneficial uses of the atom, nuclear energy, than we should cast out chemistry because of its large-scale possibility for perversion, poisoning the human system, and so on. In fact, we kill and maim thousands of people every year in chemistry, and that's very easy to look at the record there, and continue to do so, but as far as I know, people don't say we should quit doing chemistry. We don't give up our forms of transportation, our flying and our driving, because of the terrible slaughter that we have, both on the road and also in the air, through the human mismanagement of the machine. We just try to do better, and our technology is improving all the time. The present use of atomic power is a stepping stone to a better form, and I don't have too much time left, so I'll just say that I think it's essential to lead through into further improvements of controlling the atom for power generation, namely the fusion process, which is cleaner, not completely clean, but cleaner than the fission process, and certainly will get us out of the big bind we're in the limitation in the near future of fossil fuels and other and the fission fuels. One more thought, and when people think about the waste problem, I think very many people don't realize that up until now the big waste problem has come from weapons and not from nuclear reactors. The way we're going now, it may always be so. So if you throw out nuclear reactors, you will always have the waste problem with you. I think I'll cut it short there, but just make a final remark that the very God's universe, in fact, is an atomic one. The very stuff of all the processes of the universe is atomic. And I think we will never get rid of it anymore, and we will our background radiation, so we must learn to control it.
Thank you, Bill.
The next point of view on a completely different topic, and that is nuclear weaponry, and the subject of disarmament is Ted Dale, who is a member of the Holden staff. Ted?
I'm not really sure how this follows what Bill had to say, because it's really on somewhat of a different issue. And I guess the reason I was asked to talk is because 2 years ago I was arrested at the Rocky Flats nuclear weapons manufacturing plant near Denver in Colorado, where I live. I live in Boulder. And so maybe later I can relate my experience with that, which is a somewhat different issue. But maybe I should preface it by saying, give a little background like Bill did. I was born and raised in Japan. My parents are Lutheran missionaries. And so I've seen Hiroshima many times. They have a peace park there where the bomb was dropped. And there are also many living, genetic, deformed people today who, genetically deformed folks living today in that area and in Tokyo also, because of their grandparents and parents being irradiated outside of the perimeter of those that were killed instantly from the bomb. So that's part of my background, just experiencing that. When I came to the States to go to school, I went to a Quaker school, Earlham College in Indiana, and there I learned more about the nuclear issue, about disarmament, about government spending, about military spending, and I joined the Continental Walk for Disarmament and Social Justice, which was a call for reprioritization of government spending in the bicentennial year of 76, when the government was celebrating the American Dream. In the 200th anniversary, there were a lot of folks claiming that there wasn't necessarily so much to celebrate because of where all the money was going. It was going to a society oriented towards death, towards protecting through the massive billions upon billions of dollars being spent in weapons to kill. That was quite an experience, that walk. I was on it for a total of, 3 or 4 months. I walked through California, and then I went to Colorado and helped organize the Colorado branch of the walk, which met up with the main walk in the desert in Albuquerque, New Mexico. I was translating for a group of Japanese Buddhist monks who came over from Japan to join the walk because of their concern for world peace. And my main concerns, although a lot of the people involved there, as well as at Rocky Flats, which was years later, 2 years ago for me, which is the nuclear facility where they produce trigger mechanisms for hydrogen bombs, which, by the way, are basically atomic bombs, which trigger the process, which then becomes a hydrogen bomb, which is approximately 2,000 times the strength of the type of A-bombs that were dropped on Hiroshima and Nagasaki in 1945. The issues on both the walk and at Rocky Flats were both disarmament arms issue as well as environmental issues, which is usually the issues surrounding nuclear power plants. My main concerns were with the arms issue, partly because of my experience in Japan, and partly because of my religious stance, and partly because of the insanity of the arms race, which I guess I won't go into right now.
Okay.
Well, let me say one more thing. That is that what I would like to say in terms of nuclear power is that I think it is also it's definitely a socio-political issue as well as an environmental issue. And the one thing that I would like to say about that is that I think, from my orientation, there's a necessity in America today and all over the world to decentralize. And I see, over and above the environmental issue of nuclear power and nuclear arms, is the issue of political and economic centralization and the kind of system which that encourages. So that's an issue which can come up later.
Thank you, Ted.
Our third point of view tonight is Paul Hansen, who is a member of the Holden Corporation. You saw him on the kick line in the dining room and stood up last night when we had the discussion, the open discussion about what the Holden Corporation is up to. Paul?
I'm here because, primarily because I serve a congregation in Idaho Falls, Idaho, which is made up largely of nuclear scientists, physicists, engineers, and such, who work in the desert at what's known locally as the SITE, the Idaho National Engineering Laboratory, which I think is the largest research facility in nuclear energy, waste disposal, et cetera, in the world. Is that right? You know, Bill, or at any rate, it's...
Yeah, Hanford and Idaho Falls are pretty comparable.
Right. People move from our place to Hanford and Hanford back and so forth. But coming into a congregation that was full of nuclear scientists, and I, in going there, was a little ambiguous about how to relate to people like that and that kind of situation and that kind of issue. But I'm there, and I need, and I've been there for 4 years, and I need to be a pastor in an environment like that. And it came to the fore fairly early. I would get some of the members, 3 years ago, the National Council of Churches took a stance very negative relative to nuclear power. And I would get a call on the telephone from one of the members saying, Pastor, what is this National Council of Churches and do we belong to it? And then I would just put aside everything else on my desk for about the next hour to try to relate to that particular issue. I want to give just maybe four or five very general, very superficial, but hopefully somewhat illustrative things about what I understand the people in my congregation to think relative to nuclear energy. Again, I apologize for it. It's going to be very superficial. It wouldn't be true of all of them, but it's some of the things that have been kind of meaningful to me. Number one is I find that most of the... The facility in the desert there employs about 7,000 people, so there's a lot of people involved right there. And number one is I tend to see that the people who work there as not being what you'd call energy gluttons. They're not concerned that we produce as much energy as we possibly can and use it all up and all of that. In fact, some of our people are the ones who are most likely to turn their thermostats down. Some of them are most likely to drive small cars, or to walk to work, or to ride a bike, or whatever they are. I find them, generally speaking, quite sensitive about energy and its use. Along with that, they are not unconcerned about the impact on the environment of nuclear energy, or of other kinds of energy. In fact, to many of them, their commitment to nuclear energy is out of concern for the environment. And this takes a couple of interesting directions. One of them is they feel it's a shame to use fossil fuels for energy, or fossil materials for energy, in part because of their impact on the environment, in part because it's a shame to use things like that whose chemical components can be of much greater use to humanity in the long term. The environmental impact of it is interesting. I've had some of the people say to me, we're concerned about coal generating plants because they have a greater radioactive output than any of our nuclear facilities. There's more radioactivity in the effluent from a coal radiation plant than there is from a nuclear plant. Well, so some of those things I find kind of interesting. Secondly, many of our people do not see nuclear energy as the perfect long-term solution. Many of them see it as a relatively short-term solution, but something that is rather badly needed in the short term because they see us gradually, and not all that gradually, running out of or down on energy. And they see a need to have something to pick that up. They fear brownouts in the mid-80s. And in response to what some people suggest and say, well, what we need to do is conserve and get our appetites under control and all of that, very often their response to that, at least on some of them, on the part of some of them, would be, okay, yeah, we should conserve, but conservation isn't going to solve the problem. And those people who think that conservation will solve the problem, and and who feel that people can deal with it when we start running down on energy, these people are very often, the scientists I minister to, are very concerned about the social implications of us running out of energy. And they say if we think we're going to be able to deal with that, then those people who are optimistic about our dealing with that have a more positive view of mankind than their Christian faith should allow them to have. Then when we start running out of energy, we're going to run into enormous social problems that we may not want to face.
We need about another minute.
Okay. Third thing I'd say is I think that very often the nuclear scientists that I know are rather bad communicators. Many of them have a lot of scientific background. They do not seem to have much communication background or political background or whatever. And they assume, for example, that facts convince. And will unload a load of facts and assume that that changes people's minds. And I don't think it does. And some of them are absolutely appalled at how they can have presented very clearly the wonderful things about nuclear energy and it's this and that and it's all that and people still don't believe it. They just have trouble understanding why their wonderful facts haven't communicated. I'll quit.
Thanks, Paul. Sorry to cut you
short. No problem. I'm glad you did.
Let's open it up now for questions. This gentleman.
Yes, I'd like to ask Bill if perhaps people do connect the nuclear weaponry and nuclear power in their minds, not just because of the word introducing both, but because they may have read and believed that the nuclear power industry is a direct descendant of the basic nuclear research done for purposes of producing nuclear weapons, that the commercial power reactors are fairly closely related to submarine propulsion plant reactors, that the N reactor at Hanford simultaneously produces electric power for the grid and plutonium for weapons, that India exploded what they called a peaceful nuclear device from a research reactor that may have had something to do with the plans for nuclear power, and that Israel claims that their bombing raid on a nuclear installation in Iraq was to prevent the production of nuclear weapons from what was ostensibly a power plant. And could we have some facts to enlighten us on that?
Well, yes, I think that people do connect the two, and they are connected, certainly through the research. Of course, the atomic weapon, you might say, came out of research, but physics research, but whether the weapon had ever been worked on or not, research in physics would go on and will go on. I think the question that I see coming up here, and Ted may want to speak to it, is some people will say, well, because the reactor, the very operation of the reactor will produce the stuff which can be separated and used for an atomic bomb, therefore we maybe should shut down all reactors and use something else. To me, the fallacy there is that it's like the disarmament question: if we stop making nuclear weapons, where will that put us vis-a-vis somebody else who wishes to dominate us and will do it? Carter took that approach. He didn't propose we stop making nuclear submarines. We proposed that we stop the breeder, which is the next step to the fuel, solving the fuel problem. And the problem is that nobody else does it, you see. because while we have plenty of coal and can get by for a long time without them, as we heard Chris talk last night, the Union of South Africa doesn't have much choice. You see, they don't have those resources, so they have to go to nuclear. Other people will go to nuclear. As a result, the lead in some areas of many areas of nuclear research now has passed away from the United States to Europe and other areas who are now making better reactors. I don't know if that touches on what you're saying. There is a very definite connection, but still the use for a weaponry and the use for peaceful uses are two different things. Yes?
Okay. Larry?
But just to test this, isn't it correct to say that the technology of civilian nuclear power makes it easier and faster for a country to develop nuclear weapons if it should desire to do so?
Yes, I think that given the reactor, even the research reactor, if you're otherwise kept from getting the material, you can get to it faster. But I'm not sure that everybody would draw the same conclusions admitting that fact.
Dave?
I'm a physicist myself. I have a background in physics and mathematics. I've seen a large number of what I would call creative alternatives to nuclear power. It seems to me that the nuclear power, the problem of nuclear power is it's a glamorous approach, and there's a tremendous amount of capital and effort that's gone into that, and there's a lot of vested interest in that. You know, on the part of both the physicists, the community of the scientists, as well as the companies, the people that have all of that that's invested into it, and so they don't want to turn back. I mean, it seems like that's one aspect of it. And then the other aspect, as you mentioned, is that other countries are going ahead with it anyway. But there are many, what I have seen, a very large number of creative alternatives to that. They're also decentralized. They're related to various kinds of solar power, wind power, water power, and direct solar power. They're really very creative. They're not just simple things like you think of wind power. We think of a big propeller that's rotating in the sky. There are a lot of other things that are more efficient than that. There are water power types of things. There's the two people that made this man-powered aircraft that went across the English Channel, the Gossamer Albatross, they've designed now a water power system that they can build on any scale, whether it be for a small river or something that could be put in the Gulf Stream. And they've costed it out in terms of, you know, the kind of engineering that's involved, and it looks to me like a really creative kind of alternative. And they're using physics in an imaginative way. And why isn't it that we can do something like that? Why do we have to have our blinders on and go in such a narrow, it has to be nuclear.
Well, my answer to that would be yes, we should use all the. Most of the so-called creative things you mentioned, of course, are much older than nuclear power. I think we need to use... I had a 15-minute discussion with Ralph Nader a year ago. And even Nader admitted, you know, given the growth of population and the situation we have in the world, that if we conserve everything we can, not what I think we conserve if I happen to be for nuclear power, but everything Ralph Nader or anybody else thinks we conserve, do we still need to generate more power? And Nader said yes. Okay, now how do we generate that power and what is the source of fuel? If we use all the wind power we can, we use all the hydro we can. I think most people who have studied the subject realize we're still going to have to use all the coal we can, which is, there's many negative factors besides the ones that you mentioned, but we're going to be forced to use it anyway. And then, even if we didn't use nuclear, what happens when our coal runs out? You see, I think those are the things that we're faced with. We should use all, and I think we are trying to use all the constructive approaches we can. But solar, what's wrong with solar? It's just not competitive.
Well,
it's
expensive. I think the reason why it's not competitive is because, if you're only putting... I'm sorry. If you're only putting... Okay, this is out of Matthew Fox's book. It was in the last chapter there. He was talking about the book, Spirituality of Compassion. he had a quote in there that he said that, that in the case of photovoltaic cells, for example, there's only some $10 or $100 million or something, it's about $10 million, a very small amount of money that's being put into research in, say, photovoltaic cells. Now, if you decide, well, that's the way we're going to do it, and you put in many billions of dollars into that, then it seems to me that within a very short period of time, you could have as much energy that you could be, you know, supplying by that, which is also decentralized, as you could from nuclear power. But
when I say solar, I mean, there's a myriad of type of things that can be done with quote, solar. I mean, you know, it has to be, there are types of things you can have in the ocean, you know, where you have using the thermal temperature difference in the ocean, and you can produce ocean chemical factories, you know, there's all kinds of proposals that just require some capital, you know, they require a sort of money. And for the amount of money that's going to the nuclear type of thing, if you pulled all that out and we just said, look, that's a white offense, we shouldn't be pursuing that for all sorts of reasons, and we just put all our money into the other, I don't see that would make, you know, we still have the existing nuclear power plants that are providing whatever power they provide, and just going into the grid. And we're not building new plants, at least not at the moment. I mean, we're probably going to be because of the Reagan administration pushing all that. But assuming that trend continues, it is very difficult to build new plants because for a variety of reasons. First of all, because the power demand isn't going up as it was projected. So the power companies, the utility companies, can't afford to build a nuclear power plant now. It costs an enormous amount of money, you know, billions of dollars, $1-3 billion to build one nuclear power plant. And it takes a tremendously long time to get a return on that initial investment. And it seems very risky. I mean, you know, it doesn't.
Okay, Dick, and then Mark.
Okay. Well, first of all, we are building nuclear power plants. At this time, there are approximately 25 to 30 nuclear power plants under construction in this country. Secondly, you talk about them costing $2-3 billion. If they cost $5 billion, it is still cheaper to produce electricity by a nuclear power plant than it is by a coal power plant, which is the next cheapest besides hydroelectric. The Bonneville Power Corporation just wrote up a survey on the cost of producing electricity at 1990, and the coal at that time, now they are discounting hydro because hydro we know is the cheapest, there's no cost for fuel in hydro, it's only maintenance. But coal will cost one third again as much to produce 1 kilowatt of electricity as nuclear will at that time. This is 1990, and they're just using a scale of what the increase in coal prices has been over the past 10 years, and I foresee that scale is wrong. I think once you get a demand on coal, the coal price will skyrocket just as oil did, and I don't see any reason to believe that we can produce electricity by coal any cheaper.
Well, let me just throw an engineer's thing at you. If you're a physicist, you will know what the theoretical limit on conversion is in photoelectric cells. I spent many years with photoelectric cells. We developed the first nuclear battery that we're using the pacemaker, using the photovoltaic cells. They're a little more expensive there than they are now. The biggest breakthrough has not come from throwing money at the problem, but come from an uneducated inventor who came over from Europe and decided you can make them other than slicing up silicon. But in any case, the theoretical limit of that is far too low. It's a third of our thermal plant. There's no way that it will ever be, in any of the physics we know, competitive in that way. So, but even if it were to be, I think you have to make do with the things you've got until you've got something better. Edward Teller said in his book that many of the extremists, Amy Lovins and other people, they're always for the kind of power we don't yet know how to do. Now, if you want to live in the meantime, you have to use the most economical on the basis we've got.
Mark?
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to confuse the issue too much, but the way I've seen the problem in the past is that if we use nuclear, we probably have some problems. If we don't use nuclear, we're sure going to have some problems. Mm-hmm. It's a matter of problems in both cases. And I served on an energy task force for 2 years, and we worked on an interdisciplinary team. We tried not to represent government, business, anybody. We just wanted to figure out what's going on. And the information that we used when we made our presentations, after we collected the data from all over, was pretty much commonly agreed upon by a lot of people. And I don't want to get in here and take too much time, because I know you want to let people talk, but could you let me address me on the board in about 2 minutes?
Sure.
Is that illegal?
Yeah. is this a hand over here?
Yes, it is.
It's a waving, so I didn't.
Yep. Yeah. I was curious. I was sitting here saying that I was feeling.
No fault.
And maybe it's in my naivete or whatever, but it seems everything is being quantified. And it seems there's a world that's not quantifiable. And that it may be more economical to do it this way, but that may not necessarily be better. It may be cheaper. There may be limits to this and limits to that. But that doesn't mean it's necessarily best. And I just thought it was necessarily good.
Thank you. Okay, question here?
I live in Washington State. I'm quantifying a lot of stuff. I'm a former U.S. Marine. I am a homemaker, a child raiser. Now you got my credentials, all right? I also have a piece of paper here about an initiative that's in this state called Don't Bankrupt Washington. And it says in this little fact sheet, whatever you want to call it, that the WPS, which is our Washington Public Power Supply System, with interest, this cost will be almost $60 billion, with a B, dollars. I don't think we can afford it now. That's my personal opinion. And Durning was saying these figures when he ran against Dixie Lee Ray 5 years ago, almost 5 years ago. He made these statistics, not this statistic, because it wasn't around at that point. In fact, he probably even surprised at that, but that's a lot of bucks.
Okay, so question.
What can happen in Fremont accident when nuclear power plants were checked and some were closed down, some indefinitely, and that many of them had cracks or faults in them, and that the probings that went on after that happened, wasn't it shown or said that the mechanical, that the human error can be very costly in any nuclear plant? And also, it was very interesting, not interesting, but when St. Helens attracts the famous volcano attention all over the world, and every time we go up, we would read about what would happen and all the ash that would be in Portland. And then it would go across in the hemisphere, in the atmosphere, and it would go across clear to the East Coast. Well, a 3 mile accident, or one that James Fonda was in showing something, and 3 mile happened. Actually, I saw it afterwards. But what happens if it's a terrorist? Okay, you can say this is multiple, but is this improbable? If it's someone who would shoot as a pope, as someone representing a terrorist organization, someone who has said, hey, you've got too much, what's the bomb, if something should happen, whether it's something internal in a plant that would cause radioactive massive leaks or just moderate, or something that's done deliberately by someone in this country or another country, and doesn't radiation. When it goes across the atmosphere many thousands of miles, the same as ash does from a volcano.
Somebody on the panel want to address that? Want to go to Lucy Spencer?
I have to respond to it from what I saw on TFL a couple of months ago. CBS not here. CBS had a four-part series on the defense of the United States. Many of you who just arrived saw that. I saw two of those, and one of them spoke to the issue you just raised, and that is, well, they made a connection between nuclear power plants and nuclear bombs, but they said that the greatest threat for nuclear bombs would be not that somebody like Gaddafi in Libya would get 100 of them and threaten to blow up Europe and Asia, but that he would get one. And with that one, he can blackmail anybody he wants.
He used one very, very mobile, small weapon. The effects of it, first of all, this person on CBS thing like that.
first use of that would be like holding up.
I agree with those who have said that the costs are not only economic costs. I don't think economics should be the only consideration by any means when we look at options for provision of energy in the future. But even speaking economically, it is not true that in the economic calculations and costs of nuclear energy, the cost of taking care of the waste, which we still don't know how to do, are not figured into that. Nor are the costs of dismantling these plants when they wear out, even if there are no problems with them. They wear out in 20, 30, 40 years, and they got to be taken apart. And we don't even know quite how to do that yet, as I understand. Nor are those costs calculated into the cost of nuclear power production.
Yeah, first of all, I'd say that I have to disagree with you. We do know how to handle the waste, and the waste is a minor problem. The amount of nuclear waste today, as I said earlier, the greater part of it has been generated by the nuclear weapons. The waste problem is very small compared to the waste problem that we are generating, continuing to generate in the chemical industry. The nuclear waste problem has been handled much better than it's been handled by the chemical industry.
Not being handled.
Let me just make another point. Your chemical waste have an infinite half-life. Your nuclear waste have the great advantage that they decay in a reasonable length of time.
What is reasonable? Can we call for time on this one?
Anything less than infinity is reasonable.
I think either we need to go with that question.
I'd like to find out how long the waste are. Isn't it theoretically anything with a half-life never goes away? Isn't that true?
No, you're incorrect.
No, you can split anything in half again.
All right, let's take some of our chemical poisons like cadmium and mercury and so on. We've had these major problems in Japan and all over. What is their half-life? You know?
No.
It's infinity. Any nuclear radioactive isotope is characterized by a half-life. And by 10 half-lives, the strength of that, the radiation from that material, the amount of radioactive atoms has decreased to 0.1%. Now your chemical waste hasn't decreased at all. They're just as active as they ever were. So I can hardly find this an argument against nuclear waste.
But just because it's less of a problem doesn't make it not a problem.
That's correct. And there's nothing we do today that is the problem. The people who live in Colorado get more radiation than anybody around 3 Mile ever got.
Okay.
Is that a problem?
We have a question way back here in Denver. Just a minute. We have a question way back here in the corner.
I just wanted to make a point that I've heard you say first 3 times tonight that you're not as concerned about nuclear power waste as you are chemical waste. I don't see where comparing bad to worse or worse to bad is the point. I don't see any danger with solar power waste. Water power waste. Other options, I think, like the man said over here, the tunnel vision is incredible. Throwing the money in one treatment seems dangerous rather than looking at more than one issue.
We kill more people in every dam we build than we've ever killed in the nuclear industry.
Not yet. Can we have the question over here?
I think one of the things that we're overlooking, I think it's something that's been completely overlooked in all of the atomic discussion. You made allusion to it, and that is the fact that fission energy is merely a step toward the development of fusion energy.
And unless and until we get into fusion energy, this country is going to be in serious shape when it comes to energy production. Fusion energy has no waste problem. There is no waste. There is no radioactive problem with the stuff. Once the radioactive reaction...
I disagree with that.
Once the reaction takes place in a reactor, there's nothing, there's no problem from that point on. Fusion is an abundant, hydrogen is an abundant substance. The means for fusion is entirely at our disposal to develop. It's a matter of putting the money into it to develop it. One of the biggest problems is the people who are very emotional about atomic energy at large, who are putting stumbling blocks in the way of it, holding it back by ridiculous legislation, and are jacking the prices of ongoing projects right now up to astronomical means to it, $60 million, billion dollars for whoops and so forth. Why, if they had built them on the time schedule they were designed to be built on, they would have cost what they, close to what they originally said they would be.
Okay.
Let's get into fusion energy. And
okay, can we go back to Mark and his drawing on the board, and then we'll go to Ted?
Okay. The point I want to make isn't anything to do with whether I'm for or against nuclear. I want you to know at the beginning. And what I have to say, too, is based on what we know today and our best estimates of the future. 5 years from now, something could come along, and everything I have to say is totally irrelevant. So it's only the best we can do with what we know. My concern is that if you decide not to go nuclear, you've got some enormous problems you're going to have to solve some way. It's not whether we should go or not, but there will be new problems. In other words, there are going to be costs to that decision. Right now, we use about 80 quads of energy. A quad is 1 times 10 to the what, 15, 18 BTUs. About 75% of that is used, there is coal, or is oil and natural gas. And the predictions over the future is that the supply, as we go from 1980 to 2000, will gradually drop as we run out of that, which is really easy to get and cheap, and more people want to use it. Our demands are going to increase. That's the projection. That's where I'd like to do some work, is bring that down. But still, the demand is there. It's projected to increase and even pick up some, because as we go to whatever generates electricity, we have to use coal and nuclear, and some of those aren't as efficient because you have to use them to generate the electricity. The problem we're having, the one that we saw, is we have a growing gap in here. And the big breakthroughs, whether they're going to be in solar, or whether they're going to be in fusion, or whether they're going to be in hydrogen, are many years away before they're going to be economically feasible. We haven't met anybody who says that they aren't at least 10 years away, probably 20 years away. So the question is, what happens to this gap as we move through the transition? Solar, the best estimates are, even by the people in solar, they could fill 20% of our needs. But most, when they're realistic, say about 10%. So what we have left, that we know about, and I'm all for what you say, experimenting, we've got to do that for all we're worth. But that's not going to fill that gap. And we may not be able to import as we run out of the easy oil to get. And so what we have in here basically is coal and nuclear to fill that in the transition. And if we decide not to go with nuclear, we're going to have to find a way to fill that gap. And so all I wanted to say is that it's not an easy choice, at least for me anymore, to say, oh, we won't use nuclear because they're a bad thing. If we don't, there's an enormous problem there that's going to be solved some way. And I think you have to take that into consideration when you think about it. I still think you can argue against nuclear or for nuclear. But there are going to be some costs if we decide not to go to nuclear because of that gap. And that is a big gap, too, and it's going to grow up.
And actually, it's not within our voluntary choice. We have to use nuclear and coal.
Some say that if we were to fill that gap with coal, it costs $1.6 trillion to make the transition. That's in today's terms, 60% of our GNP. Where are we going to generate it in a short period of time? If we're going to do it with nuclear, we'd have to build a new plant every 10 days between now and the year 2000 to fill that gap. Just to give you some feel for the dimension.
Okay, hang on, folks. I want to tell you we've got 5 minutes until 10 o'clock, which is supposed to be the end of the forum, and I have 3 hands up. Ted wants to speak. Dick and Larry.
Well, I didn't really want to get into this. I was afraid to get into a nuclear energy issue, and I wanted to talk about disarmament. But since we're on the issue, and it's obviously going to be here to stay, I want to say, after what Mark said,
you know, it seems to me that nuclear power, and I agree totally with the environmental dangers, especially where I'm coming from. I think that it will be experimented with, it will be improved, and it will be, you know, quote unquote, almost error-free at some point. My problem with it is what I said at the beginning, which is socio and political centralization of power. And I think that it's very important that we see the necessity of decentralizing our power production, of decentralizing those kinds of things, because I see that as, you know, eating away at the root of the society at this point. And I don't know if you know, if you really see what I'm talking about, but I see that over and above the environmental issue, you know, as a very important issue. And that's why, in terms of...
Dan, but what is more centralized about a particular nuclear plant somewhere in the state of Washington than is centralized about our getting our power from Grand Coulee Dam, which we've been doing
okay.
for 40 years?
Okay, what I'm saying is if we keep going building nuclear power plants, there's the problem of sabotage, as people have talked about. There's the problem, and then, whereas if you go to the other area, I heard he said, Bill mentioned something about Amory Lovins as being radical, and I suppose he is. He has a good book out called Soft Energy Paths. I've heard him speak several times, and he basically propagates the idea that small is beautiful, and I'm sure you all know that. That idea. And if we decentralize more, I'm not talking about a radical leap, you know, I agree that there's a gap there and we'll probably continue to be nuclear for a while. But the problem with nuclear energy is there's a problem of sabotage, political and military problems. There's the problem of centralizing and therefore having to transport energy over long spaces. Whereas if you decentralize, that would be less of a problem.
Okay, but my point is just that we already, in the state of Washington, in the river, depend on centralized points
okay.
of power.
Okay, and what I'm saying is
we're
need to decentralize more. If nuclear power plants are going to be safe from sabotage and that kind of thing, you're going to get more of a police state. You know, you're growing towards that 1984, whatever it is, kind of thing. So I just wanted to raise that social political issue because I think it's very important.
It seemed to me that we missed the point on what happened in the 50s when all the power people and the ecologists and the economists got together and they knew we were going to have a power shortage coming up in the future centuries, and they committed our country at that time to going the nuclear power way because they saw that it was a better way. Now we are sitting here contradicting all that. It's nice to have the site ahead of time, but we built these plants for that reason because we knew the power shortage was going to exist. Now if the country all of a sudden decides that no, we don't want nuclear power, we're going to close down all our nuclear power plants, maybe you don't realize, but the city of Chicago depends almost 80% on nuclear power to power their city.
Yeah, I'm not
the
talking
state
about
of Pennsylvania depends 60% on nuclear power to power the state. Now we're sitting out here in the West saying, well, we don't want nuclear power. What about the industrialized East that needs the nuclear power? These are the people that are going to be getting awful upset when they don't have lights to turn on in their house and they don't have a job to go to because they depend basically on electricity to melt their steel, they depend on to make their aluminum.
I'm talking about the need in the future to shift our emphasis on centralization, which if we go all nuclear, it will be a need to shift towards decentralized forms of power.
But then that will be true for any large power station, be it nuclear, coal, be it solar, or anything else.
Well,
you must decentralize industry.
Decentralize a power. I just want to make one more point. He says about sabotaging a nuclear power plant. How many people do you think would be killed if somebody would blow up Grand Coulee Dam? Just think of that.
The water flow from Grand Coulee is going to happen once. Nuclear waste from a power plant, if it is sabotaged, will be around for quite a while, even if its half-life is only
what, 50 million years, something like that.
How long was the farm? I myself, when I'm a father, I don't want to raise a kid who has three arms.
No, I don't.
Right? Who cares?
You but how long
is the way to run from the atom bomb?
If a person breaks into a nuclear power plant, which is awfully easy to do, if I had some guns and three or four other people, we could get together and figure out how to get in there. It's no problem.
I guarantee you wouldn't.
Oh, come on.
I guarantee you would not get in.
There's 15-year-olds in Chicago who's breaking into Play-Doh. And Play-Doh is the biggest, the strongest, and the most complicated computer network in this country.
Oh,
and
Alex, okay, Larry? No,
wait.
Do you want to jump into the middle of this race?
No.
You're why?
You have to use the last word, you know.
Okay. And Marilyn, then we'll let Marilyn have the last word here.
Oh, come on. Well, we're ready for you.
It is not a wind-up kind of point.
I don't think this is a wind-up kind of discussion. I think it's just we will stop it at some point.
Elvin Weinberg of the TVA was the one who talked about making a Faustian bargain with society when he said we nuclear people have made a Faustian bargain with society. On the one hand, we offer an inexhaustible source of energy. On the other hand, we demand of society for this magical energy source both a vigilance and a longevity of our social institutions that we are quite unaccustomed to. And that, I guess that's what concerns me, is whether society has the wherewithal to handle this for the long term. I mean, right now I would not want an atomic energy system in place in, say, Belfast or Beirut. But in 1600, Belfast and Beirut were stable communities. And if you want to think of anything for the long term, then one has to take Weinberg's Faustian bargain seriously. Now, I go on to say Weinberg, in the end, comes down in favor of developing nuclear power, but there are serious questions raised about anything but a transition period when you're dealing with something as literally explosive as steam.
That was an emotional statement. Okay. Marilyn?
I don't want to insinuate from my comment that no one here has been using any of their Christian mind of Christ in their comments, but I am slightly ashamed that in a Christian community we have not asked the question, what does faithfulness to our Lord mean and his way of peace and his way of wholeness? How does that relate to how we evaluate the economic questions, the lifestyle questions, our needs and our wants, and all of those questions? I'm not insinuating that no one's been plugging into that quietly, silently, or subconsciously, but we certainly haven't consciously. I just want to say that. I think we should have more discussions on the military question. It's interesting to me that this conversation went to discussing energy for the United States rather than global peace.
Or global energy,
or global energy.
Thank you, Marilyn. I think that's as good a comment as possible to end the formal discussion on. It is 10 o'clock. It's, in fact, after 10 o'clock. Let us call the forum over. If you wish to stay, I think there would probably be